Welcome to the Ask Drone You podcast, where it's all about answering your drone questions today so you can fly better, safer, and even get paid tomorrow. And now, your hosts. One is a man of few hairs, and the other likes to be called Batman. Rob Burdick and Paul Lincoln.
Hey everyone, it's Paul, and welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. I have the pleasure of having John Ruprecht on the line here to talk about the FAA's announcement yesterday in regards to the registration of drones. So John, welcome, and thank you again for being on the show. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So we just watched the entire press release. You know, there are a lot of comments coming out there on Twitter, on Facebook. I mean, people are really getting angry over it. And it's nice to hear the questions that are being asked by the press because it seems like they're becoming more and more educated on this topic. So overall, what did we hear? And then we'll get into kind of your reaction and the reactions of others as well.
Okay, sure. Yeah, the press release is regarding primarily the registration of drones, the hobbyist drones, the recreational guys, because all 333 operators are required to register their drones going forward when the proposed rules come out, maybe 1 to 3 years from now under Part 107, they're all required to register their drones. So this is only registration of recreational hobby drones. That is what was the focus here. And the Secretary Fox of the Department of Transportation, they are the boss, if you will, of the FAA. They announced that they were creating a task force, that they called a task force, that was going to come up with these proposed rules by November the 20th. And the task force was going to present that to the FAA by November the 20th. And then they were going to try to get the rules out in mid-December. Some of the individuals on the task force, you had Peggy Gilligan. She's from the FAA. She's head of the Air Safety Branch, which is over AFS 80, which is the Aircraft Integration Office. And then you also have Brian Wynn from AUVSI, Rich Hansen from AMA, Tim Kennel from Alpha. The Vice President for Precision Hawk was there, John Resnick from DJI, Greg McNeil from AirMap.io. Those are the ones I could see and identify just from looking at the people that were present. They're trying to get these proposed rules out to the FAA, and then the FAA is going to publish it. I noticed that the reporters were actually pretty good at asking some questions.
Yeah, I love the questions that they were asking. I mean, one of the questions said, you know, hey, I remember in, she was wrong on the law that she had mentioned. She said MAP 21, but she was talking about, you know, the Modernization mm-hmm. Act of 2012 and said, wait a minute, I thought Congress told you guys you cannot make any rules against model aircraft. And then their response, I mean, the FAA's response was, well, you know, we're dealing with licensing here, or we're not dealing with licensing here, rather we're talking about registration. So what does that mean?
Section 336 of the FMRI prohibits the FAA from promulgating any rules regarding regulating the flying of recreational aircraft. Now, I just said a very, very, very carefully. I said very carefully, promulgating, okay, creating as a verb. So, what's the FAA doing? They're not creating any type of new laws going forward. They're actually just going back in time to repurpose the regulations that are already in place, which creates an issue because in that blog post that I wrote the other day, the FMRA, if you will, locked in time the regulations. Because remember, they can't create new regulations. They're going to have to use the ones that are already in place. So they're going to have to somehow, with this proposed rules that they're going to come out with, somehow use what's already in place or figure out how to repurpose what's already in place. So, which gives you, you start thinking like, well, how are they actually really creating anything? You're really more or less researching what you already have, because if you're going to create anything, then you're going to have some issues there that could potentially be challenged later on for a violation of the FMRA. So that's one issue there. And then the other one is that if these are actually rules that are binding upon the hobbyists out there. Okay, this is how it works when it comes to administrative law. Most people don't understand this part of the government, and so simplicity-wise, I'll just explain it. You have the five branches of government. You know, you have your executive, judicial, and your legislative. The other two that we don't really fully analyze and understand is you have your administrative. Okay, now using this, I'm just for functionality sake saying the five branches. We only have, according to the Constitution, but in functionality, we have the administrative agencies that have been created by Congress, and then you have the news, okay? The news agency. So all five of those interact and mess with each other, okay? Because if the news agencies start doing certain things, people get unelected, you know, that's how it all kind of somewhat works. Administrative law-wise, what happens there is Congress has authority granted to it under the Constitution, so they're going to have to pick their power from one of the parts of the Article 1. Okay, so Congress normally chooses Article 1, Section 8, which is the Commerce Clause to get power over a lot of things. And so it passed the Federal Aviation Act, 1958, for interstate commerce of aircraft. Okay, then you have intrastate intermingling with interstate, so necessary proper clause. They have delegation there, and they can also delegate that to the FAA. They have the power, the Congress has the power. They delegate it to the FAA to promulgate, create rules to enforce creating some regulations. So Congress actually doesn't do that because a lot of those guys aren't aviation experts. They turn it over to the agency, and the agency has to play, if you will, in their sandbox. They can only play within the rules, the boundaries that Congress gave them, delegated to them. Okay, so this issue here is part of the rulemaking process. Previous Congresses have passed like Administrative Procedures Act, Federal Register Act, Regulatory Flexibility Act, many other acts. They all apply to this rulemaking process. And I'll explain here in a second what that means. You have executive orders from past presidents, Clinton and Bush. You have they all apply to this. And so it's a giant, long process. And we're currently going through that right now with the proposed rules, Part 107. And that was started back in 2009. Proposed rules were just finally proposed back here in February. How it works, simplicity-wise, it's notice, then comment from the public, okay? Then the FAA, whoever agency it is going to then publish the final rules, which take effect in about 30 days after. And that's a super, you know, 60,000 feet view, okay? But internally, you have inside the FAA, how the rule would have to get done. And this is in a non-emergency setup. They have Office General Counsel puts out a notice. There's an Aviation Rule Advisory Committee inside the FAA. Goes through multiple bureaucracy channels. Then it has to go to the Office Secretary of Transportation. They have to approve it. It has to go to the Office Manager and Budget. Then it goes to the Office Information Regulatory Affairs. And it's just a bunch of ping pong, and it normally goes on because if somebody says no, it has to get reworked and changed to make sure everybody's happy. So it's the equivalent of cooking a Thanksgiving meal where you don't offend anybody's dietary, religious, allergy restrictions whatsoever, and all 30 people at the table go, that tasted good. It's going to be a little hard. You can see you're going to be working at it a lot. You have to get everybody to sign off on it. You can't offend everybody, and everyone has a special issues, okay? Well, the other way around the rulemaking process is you can do a direct final rule, and that's only under a few certain situations. And in my blog post, I list out one of them regarding an emergency. So if the FAA doesn't have the ability to actually go through the whole rulemaking process because airplanes are crashing and blowing up or something, they can just issue an emergency rule directly. But it has to be an emergency, not just like I think it's an emergency situation. So I cited a case in the blog post. And it is an emergency, but then you allow a 60-day wait time on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, is saying that's not really an emergency then. It should be, like, immediate. So that brings up some issues here. What type of authority is the FAA actually going to, you know, how are they actually going to do this? Because if this isn't really truly an emergency, then the whole entire rule can get shot down, saying this is violating the Administrative Procedures Act, Section 553, subsection B. How do I know that?
How do you know? I was just gonna say, man, you were really prepared for this podcast.
I sleep, eat, and breathe like drone law. Like, I know this like very well. So that's why I'm like, what's up? And there's some problems here. I mean, even WEF made a mistake when you're saying you can't drop anything from, because the lady brought up the whole gun incident where the gentleman was shooting off a gun and they, the DOJ was investigating him, but they never cited him. He was ended up being arrested for some other type of incident that went on, but it wasn't actually for firing the gun. So Huerta was responding to it and saying that you can't drop any objects. But if you read, I know the Part 91 fairly well. And Part 91.15 came to mind. It says, no pilot in command of a civil aircraft may allow any object to be dropped from that aircraft in flight that creates a hazard to persons or property. Okay, if you stop right there, you're like, oh, looks like he was right. However, the next sentence says, however, this section does not prohibit the dropping of any object if reasonable precautions are taken to avoid injury or damage to persons or property. So if you're on your own property, how is firing a gun off via drone actually illegal per the Federal Aviation Regulation? So it's a difficult area. The FAA is going to have a hard time dealing with this, and I think registration, I don't think this is the way to go. I think geofencing actually would be a far better way to go, because registration merely points you to who might have done something after the fact, but does not actively prevent anything on the front end, while geofencing would prevent the uneducated newbie flyers that play the how high can we fly the drone game, right?
Yeah.
That would prevent that. I don't know how many people are going to be doing the, especially even the registration point. I did like the point that they made that if you're forced to register everything, it educates you that you need to comply with the rules. I was like, okay, but you could get the same type of effect that the registration has by just getting all the manufacturers to require that all drones are locked when you purchase them, and then you have to like go home, jump on the internet, and like take a little course, and then you would have like an unlock code. So you can have like a little, a couple videos. Don't fly in your airport. Don't fly up high above, 400 feet, stuff like that. And then in addition to that, you could probably provide practical YouTube videos on how to get some really great, awesome shots, how to manage and properly, take care of these pictures and taking care of your aircraft. I think that would be a far better way to go about doing it, with the geofencing and locking it, than the registration. Because I don't even know how you're
going to
identify the drones.
Let me interrupt you here for a second. That's a very good question, because that question was actually brought up in the meeting. One of the reporters goes, how are you going to identify a drone if you're not able to A, see the drone, or B, collect the drone after the negligent flight? And really, the room was left silent.
Well, right. I have a Cheerson CX-10 with a little logo on top. If I go 10 feet away, I can't even see that logo. So I don't know how that is going to identify any of these drones being flown near airports. It just won't. The situation where it could potentially, potentially become helpful is if there was some type of crash or wreck, White House lawn, stuff like that. You could at least tie it back to the individual who originally registered it, but then at that point, the guy could just say, hey, I sold it, or I, lost it, or it flew away, it was stolen, and then what's your next flight, what's your follow-up after that point? You could potentially have people that want to cooperate with you, that, I sold it, and here's the email address, or here's the guy's name, and stuff like that, but would the registration requirements actually impose upon the individual the requirement to log who they bought and sold from, and how would that jive with the Federal Aviation Regulations and all the rulemaking laws and stuff that I just talked about under the Administrative Procedures Act? There's actually the Privacy Act, I think, is getting potentially implicated here, because the Office of Management and Budget has to look over what type of information is actually collected. There's a portion there. That's actually what Part 107 had to do. There was a study that had to go on with the OMB to determine what in the world you actually want, what type of info to collect. And so I there's a lot of problems these guys have. Geofencing would be better and easier.
So what you're saying is that there are many potential roadblocks already in place that would implement or hinder this registration really to go in effect outside of the logistical nightmare of trying to do it by, Christmas time. Because one of the points that I made, and I tweeted out on our Drone U Twitter, at the Drone U, was the fact that, most stores are ordering their stock for Christmas in, June and July. So how do they expect to implement a system, let alone work with private entities on implementing this system or putting, information in drone boxes? It's just, it seems rather difficult.
Correct. Right. This would have been the right kind of announcement for the DOT to make back when the drones were being shipped from China for the Christmas season. If you will, you're really at this point only potentially going to be affecting the drones, out in the summer season, right? So yeah. Logistically, you're not even hitting the target you're trying to get at because, everything's bought and sold, many months ago, and they've already, they've already planned this out. So there's the issue there. How do you comply with this? Just regulatory wise, operating under Part 47, you're required to have your drone registered if you're going to be flying, operating in the national airspace, but it's operating. How does buying a drone, in a big box store, with the battery out, in a box, without the propellers on, how is that any way whatsoever operating per the Federal Aviation Regulation? I'm trying to, figure that one out, and I'm like, I don't know. So if Part 47 tells you that you have to have a registered drone if you're operating, how do you then somehow extenuate that over to buying a drone at a store must be registered? See, that last gap is where I don't understand how to do it. If you want to say all drones, all model recreational guys have to be registered if they're operating in the airspace, I could say, the FAA could argue that. Under the FMRA, they're probably good with that because that's an already existing regulation. They're not promulgating. Remember I said that word, promulgating, creating? Mm-hmm. They're not creating that. So they could argue that, and I think that's a pretty strong case, but that's for only operation, So if you're on the ground, but then you'd actually, it's hard for enforcement-wise because until that guy actually took the drone off the ground, how would you be able to actually get him? Because he would just say, I have a drone in my hand.
Yeah.
Not really operating, right? You know what I'm saying? So you have to watch him, and then he's already up in the airspace, and then what? You're going to, run over there and arrest them? And I'm hoping you're going to do what? At that point, you got a hard situation. It's like, you remember the old Westerns where there's, the two guys, the bank robbers, and they're running, and there's, a posse after them? And then what do? They split. So it's the split forces. That's what's going to happen in the same situation. You're going to have... are you going to, try to grab the guy if he runs or whatever? But then what about the drone? Now he can fly. You want that drone to fly off, right?
Yeah.
So I grab the drone, and then the guy runs off, and then hopefully he registered it. So there's some operational issues right there.
Yeah, there are. Now, one question I want to ask is, I'm going over tweets here, and now that we've kind of gone through the rough, the dirty legal side of this, and I have to say, it's really going to be interesting to see how this plays out further, because one point I wanted to make, if history sets the precedent, and on AstroNew, we've talked about back in the days of the Wright brothers and the difficulty the American government gave them with their aircraft and how they first began to sell their aircraft in France and England because of it. So history set the precedent that the FAA, in my eyes, or in my opinion, that there would be some sort of regulatory obstacle, if not boundary. But now, going in through history sets the precedent, now we've got this whole registration fact. So where can we pull a historical precedent that may give us foresight or may foreshadow what we'll see in the future? And I ask you if you have heard of the CB radio registration back in the day when the United States government said everyone who has a CB radio has to register it, and less than 0.1% actually registered their CB radios. Could you see something like this playing out in the future for drones as well?
No, I don't see the CB one being very similar. The reason why is people are fearful okay, fearful. Don't bring up facts or anything, because when you're fearful, you don't care about facts. You just want to alleviate your fear, and the only way to do that is to eliminate whatever is making you fearful. CB radios being, people operating the CB band that are unlicensed or even using unlicensed equipment, that's not causing anybody to be fearful, where people are staying up at night or going, I'm afraid to do air travel because, the CB radio might go off and I might fall out of the sky and blow up and die because of the engine. But right, you can think there's a fear here that people have of the drones, and so I don't think that's going to be the same thing where there's going to be so many drones in the sky and then people go, okay, we're cool with it. They're going to, I think there's the tide is changing. We're a bunch of boats in the tide right now, and it's going not our way as drone operators. And I'd want to stress to everyone at this point, this is where we need to be extremely hyper-vigilant on educating everybody regarding safety, because all these sightings, no one's really substantiating how close they are, if they're even drones or not. But just the mere sighting up high, if you will, that's being used against the industry as a whole. And I think that there might be some interesting conversations of the industry needs to have. At what point do you start making concessions here, because the tide is going against everybody, and if you potentially give up some concessions now for, hey, everything's at least geofence, you might be able to get industry off your back something potentially worse could happen. And I don't think that would be the rational mind, but for just looking at it from an objective standpoint, I don't think that'd be grounds for creating broad sweeping type of legislation against drones. However, if one drone hits an airliner, especially, the fear that it's going to strike into everyone, and there's going to be lots of bills introduced, and most likely something will pass, cracking down on drones. And that's what I'm actually very fearful of. And so that's what I'm almost thinking, maybe do we want to start giving concessions out? And start saying, yeah, we want to geofence everything. And maybe, I wouldn't even say requiring a licensure or something, but at this point, I'm starting to feel like this is popping up here very frequently within the last 6 months, that is. All these bills getting introduced into Congress, and there are some of them, or a few of them, are getting interesting legislation and little parts added that I don't think people would like, especially Senator Booker's, Cory Booker's bill that he introduced. It was all great and fine and dandy until you read the fine print, and that the only way you could get certified, you couldn't do the 303 process. You would have to go over and actually get your drone certified at one of the test centers. And I couldn't, from just the reading of it, it didn't seem like it was clear whether or not it was just a kite. Like, let's say DJI put in 10, 20 grand to get this thing certified, and everything like it would be okay. Kind of similar how the aviation process works, where you'd have a type design that's approved, and then everything that conforms to that type is approved afterwards. Or it was every single individual drone that ever needed to be approved had to go to that test site, and how much money is that going to cost? So there's an interesting issue here where the drone community really needs to start somewhere, I guess, banding together, being hyper safety at this point. I mean, it's like hyper safety above and beyond. And these people posting YouTube videos over crowds and near airports and stuff, oh my gosh, that just needs to seriously stop. And people need to go out of their way to get those guys to stop that immediately. Because those videos go around the internet, and people on the FAA see that. Legislators see that stuff. And it's just more ammo being used to fuel the fire against the drone community.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's really interesting to see how this will play out. So, is Senator Cory Booker's bill dead in the water right now? Do we know that?
I haven't checked on the progress of it. I haven't heard anything since it was proposed. Feinstein had a bill also, and then Schumer was talking about one, and then another guy, I forgot his name, he also just introduced one as of, I think it was a day or so after the hearings. I was it about a week ago, week or two ago. So they're introducing these things on and on, and I'm kind of wondering who in the world's actually proposing this stuff behind the scenes. So there's some interesting question there, like, who's actually putting the language into these bills? Because these senators don't write these bills. It's normally someone that an industry group or somebody that say, hey, why don't you pass this? And then, hey, I like that. Okay. And then it gets introduced as a bill, and then it works its way through committees. Then what, you know, the House or the Senate passes it. Then work has to be done on the other side, and then you have to reconcile it, and then it has to be signed off by the president. So I don't know how many of those are going to get through, but notice the pattern. We've had a lot of them popping up within the last 6 months. So I think everyone needs to be on their best behavior right now.
Yeah, it sure seems like it. Well, John, I really appreciate your breakdown of this meeting with FAA's requiring registration. Do you have a prediction of what you think will happen?
I think that they're going to argue mandatory registration of some sort. The FAA is going to start going after people, and then it's going to be up to individuals to fight it out with the FAA. I think that's most likely what's going to happen. The blog post that I wrote, by the way, the reason why I cranked that thing out, like, at lightning speed right after it was broke was because I already had that blog post in a draft format because I was already predicting this about a month and a half ago. I just was so busy I couldn't actually post it. I mean, that's why I'm saying, like, I think this is the way we're going. I already had that draft. Fairly. I mean, who can crank that thing out in about a couple hours, right? No, I already had it already. A lot of it, the research and everything done, because I started seeing the trajectory this was going. And it's commercial registration, it's going to happen. It's whether or not there's going to be recreational registration that's going to happen. And it looks like that's the way everyone's going right now. The tide's definitely going against us.
So what could drone operators do then to try to counteract this if they didn't agree with it?
I would say talk to your congressman, your elected official, the federal, that is, representatives, and start asking, you know, telling them, like, hey, I think this is a really bad situation. I think what would be a better thing to do is have the DOT FAA start trying to implement a geofencing setup as opposed to the registration setup. Because did you notice that one of the reporters asked about geofencing, and they're like, no, we're not even talking about geofencing. And I'm like, well, the geofencing one would be, like, the easiest to implement because you wouldn't have to, like, actually involve any type of mandatory registration stuff at a lower level. So what is this? Like, I go to the big box store and I say, hey, what about drone? And then, like, what I get my ID check, like, you know, you're, like, buying cigarettes or something for a young person, right? You're like, okay, and then you have to fill out some paperwork. You got to do it all right there. Well, that's going to be a logistical nightmare for the sellers. Why not just have every drone that's manufactured already have it locked with the geofence setup that you have to unlock? I think that would be the better way to do it. Unless they're trying to do a similar registration idea where all the smarter drones are registered, you know, where they're locked and then you have to register them. They might be arguing that. So maybe a complete package registration and geofencing. But then that also goes back to like, what's the registration really going to do? Like, let's say you register your drone. Only the drones that are gathered from, like, some crime scene or accident, you can identify them, would be the ones that are going to be actually, you could actually use. And you then, at the next point, are going to have to figure out how do you tie the person that was, Fox is making the point, how do you tie the drone to the operator guy? That's the hard part. You can find the drone sometimes. Well, sometimes. Not all the times. I mean, I say if things get to crash, just catch up on fire. I don't know what type of placard you're going to have to put on this thing, because if you have it sharpied on or get some mailbox stickers or something and put it on there, that's all going to burn up. So how do you, like, identify it? So you're going to have to go with some type of laser etching in either the circuit boards or the motors, something that'll survive a crash. And that's going more to, like, a really full, like, a heavily regulated setup. And this is very analogous to a gun control. Like, so what is considered a drone? Do we regulate the flight controllers? Do we regulate the motors? Do we regulate the LiPo batteries? What do we regulate? Are you really going to regulate all the parts? There's all these do-it-yourself kits all over the place. So something's going to have to be considered the drone at some point. There's going to be a cutoff. And so that's the whole issue with guns. The lower receiver is considered the gun, and that's what's regulated federally. And all the other parts you can buy and sell on the internet with very little regulation whatsoever. Federally, that is, state, you know, with the magazines, they ban, you know, the high-capacity mags and stuff. But federally, it's a different story. So that the task force is going to have to label something, and then they're going to have to like track it and regulate it. Because otherwise, if you can just piece it together, it kind of defeats this whole purpose, right? Because you can just hide out and right? Get your NASA and some parts and some duct tape and some sticks, and there you go, boom, you got your quadcopter, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. So definitely, if you want to change the impending direction that we're going with drone regulation, I really recommend to all of our listeners out there that you talk to your congressmen and women, you talk to your senators, make your voice heard, because we are really the only thing standing in the way of this legislation. You know, it's funny, John, one of the things I wanted to bring up is a tweet I just got, and someone was saying, Paul, this really reminds me of gun legislation, except the gun owners have the NRA and we don't have anything. And then someone replied to that and said, yeah, the AMA is now deer in the headlights next to AUVSI. It's really interesting, you know, to see where this has gone. But guys, remember, the only power that we have is a collective voice or collective authority. So if you want to make a difference, make your voice heard. John, thank you so much for being on the show again today. For those of you who don't know John does write regularly about these topics. John, where can they find your blog, your information?
You can find my the blog is on my website at www.jruppckla.com. That's spelled JRUPPRECHTLAW.com. And you can also find me on Twitter, which is at RuppckLaw.
And John, again, we thank you so much for being on the show today. We also are very appreciative of the support from MultiCopterWarehouse.com, where you can join the aerial revolution and go professional cases. So guys, that's going to do it for us today. We can't wait to hear your comments and your questions. So be sure to record them at AskDroneU.com. This is going to be a hot topic, and we want to hear what you have to say. So thanks everyone again for listening. My name is Paul. You're listening to John, and this is Ask Drone U.
Thanks for listening to the Ask Drone U podcast. Submit your questions at www.askdroneu.com.